Broadcasting from the campus of Salisbury University, this is WSDL Ocean City, NPR News Talk 90.7, putting Delmarva first. It's time for Delmarva Today with your host, Don Rush.
The nation's attention has been focused on the small Florida town of Sanford, where a young African-American teenager, Trevon Martin, was shot and killed by a self-appointed neighborhood watch captain, George Zimmerman. This is Don Rush, and welcome to Delmarva Today. So far, Zimmerman has not been charged in the case, with police saying he told them he shot in self-defense under the state's Stand Your Ground law. Bring everybody up to date. The latest developments, we had the Sanford Police Chief, Bill Leahy, is temporarily stepping aside amid the accusations that his department bungled the investigation. Lee's announcement that he was stepping aside came shortly before Florida Governor Rick Scott said another key investigator tied to the case, State Attorney Norman Wolfinger, also agreed to withdraw. Angela Corey of the 4th Judicial Circuit Court was appointed to replace Wolfinger. Scott also added that Lieutenant Governor Jennifer Curl would lead a special new task force to prevent future tragedies like Martin's death and would conduct public hearings, take testimony, and recommend actions, legislative and otherwise, to both protect citizens and safeguard rights. To take a look at this issue in our studio right now, we have Craig Wilson. He's an elder with the Cathedral of Love, a local Salisbury church, and also Orville Penn, who serves on the advisory board for the Lower Eastern Shore Children's Center, and also, as I understand, appointed to the Wicomico County Youth and Civic Center Commission. Well, let me first of all ask both of you, sort of go back, when you first began to hear about what happened, and most of the attention nationally really was gripped when they released the 911 tapes, because as it's almost as strange as it now seems, this thing actually took place in late February, and here we are, like, say, for instance, the middle of March. So, well, Arvid, let's start with you. When did you first become aware of this, and what was your reaction to what was going on in terms of what had happened?
Don, if I recollect accurately, I think my first exposure to this was about 2 weeks ago, and I heard it the stations that I look at on television. That's where I saw it, and I saw it repeatedly being rebroadcast. You know, and I thought it happened more frequent than in fact it did. You mentioned a good point. It happened back, I think it was around the
basketball. Like April 26th, something like that.
Exactly,
yeah.
February 26th. February 26th, and it's kind of surprising it took that long, but my initial impression of hearing that was, oh my gosh, here we go again. Here we go again. And I was saying, well, why in the world is it taking so long to resolve a move in a direction of resolving what appears to be or what could be a very, very detrimental situation? And that concerned me.
Craig, what about you? When did you hear about it? When did you become aware of it? And what was your reaction to it?
Well, the same as Orville. I usually keep up with the news. And it's about a week ago that I actually became aware of what was going on in Florida. And I was on the phone with my brother across the bridge. And he had mentioned to me, are you aware of this Trayvon Martin case? I said, yeah, but I really haven't heard that much about it. And then when he began to tell me about it and about the 911 tapes that I began to listen to, I really began to think, like, wow, this is really, really, really bad. So I really can't believe, just as Orville said, that it's taken so long. This happened back in February, and I really didn't hear about it in February. Mm-hmm. As he said, more frequently, I just heard about it. And one of my main concerns is why, I guess because of the 911 tapes, why is it taking so long for a resolution to come to this situation?
Of course, I mean, I understand that the African-American newspapers and media, my understanding is that they began reporting this obviously right away, certainly in Florida. But
right.
I know I've not monitored the black media, but I mean, I'm assuming that they jumped on this, although we still didn't seem to get to hear it in the mainstream, that is, the major networks.
I really didn't hear about it as in reference to everything that happened until probably a week ago when I really began to focus on it. They began talking about it, you know, on the media, on the internet, you know, TV. I really didn't know that it had happened that quick.
Yeah, you know, There are many cases like this, or similar cases around the country that is reported frequently in mediums that carry news generic to the African American community and Hispanic communities. Very rarely does the media at large capture these stories, and when they do, it's because there's something catastrophic is on the verge of happening or getting ready to happen. So, you know, I got to go back to my initial impressions was, oh, my gosh, I hope this is not what I think it could very well be. And, well, we'll see what's happening.
What do you make of, what do you think this says about, I guess, the community down there? But do you think that this is more common than we think?
Oh,
I mean,
absolutely.
Maybe the specific.
Yeah.
And this is,
absolutely.
By the way, is,
no if buts ends. Yeah, absolutely. No if buts ends. I alluded to the fact that if you were to pick up any newspaper, most newspapers that are geared towards dealing with minority issues, so to speak, you'll find lots of cases that exist around the United States where things of this sort has happened. It's not, in many cases, we, African Americans, Hispanic, et cetera, are more aware and more sensitive to the fact that it's happening. The community at large typically does not become aware of these kinds of dilemmas unless there is a threatening effect or impact that could adversely affect them, as we see happening right now down south.
What do you think this means in terms of our community? I mean, one of the things that struck me is that a number of the folks who support Neighborhood Watch programs, they say, first and foremost, Neighbor Watch people should not be carrying guns. And they say, second of all, they should not be trying to intercede or intervene when it comes to when they see a crime or even following them. And then in this particular case, the office, the police officer said, don't follow him. He did it, obviously, anyway. What about that and your familiarity with Neighborhood Watch groups?
Well, here again, you mentioned the gentleman, Mr. Zimmerman.
Yes.
I heard the 911 tapes, by the way. Mr. Zimmerman was told... advised, maybe told was a bit too strong, advised not to follow Mr. Martin, Trevon. And in fact, he did. And not only did he do that, but he had a weapon with him. And something happened. We're trying to find out the details of what happened. Something happened. So it would lead you to think, well, maybe folks that are on train, these groups, neighborhood groups of this sort, should not be carrying deadly weapons. And I believe in Florida that there's a law they have now that grants them or gives them the authority, permission to not only carry them but defend themselves if they feel they are going to be threatened. But, you know, as I listened to those 911 tapes or the 911 tape, I said, well, it didn't appear as if Mr. Zimmerman was being threatened. As a matter of fact, he chased Trevon. And a tussle of some sort happened. We're still trying to find out the details of what transpired. But, you know, when things like this happen, my first question is, couldn't you have shot him in the leg if, in fact, you had to shoot? Or couldn't you have shot in the arm? Yeah. Why did it have to be deadly? That's all. For me, that's always a question that arises. I mean, it always bothers me when I hear something like this leads to what in effect did happen here, where somebody's life was lost.
Right.
Young, what was he, 17 years
17,
of age?
17 yes,
years
17.
Of age. That always, young man.
Fairly small in stature, actually.
Yeah, and you know, the reports that we've gotten indicates that all he had was some Skittles, candy, and iced tea, and ends up dead.
And I think the issue goes furthermore to, everybody applauds Neighborhood Watch for its innocent intention. I mean, it's a good program to keep communities safe. I think with this incident with Mr. Zimmerman, I really believe that he had the intention that day to look for somebody and to actually cause harm. It is very, very, very sad. And as you alluded to earlier about the plight of African Americans, who this was a gated community, meaning that, you know, obviously, in a gated community, you think that people who live there are well off, and It's sad that even today, in 2012, black people are still being targeted. And it's just senseless. It even goes beyond the black and white or racial issue, because this was an Hispanic that shot, you know, an African American. But it was just wrong. There was no, I truly believe, listening to the tapes and the intention of this Mr. Zimmerman, he set out that day to shoot somebody. Yeah. And it wouldn't have mattered if the person had a hoodie on, if they were black or white, because he couldn't tell what color they were because he had a hoodie on. He had the intention to shoot somebody. And I think that right there is just, you know, nobody, who gives you the right to do that? Who gives you the right to take somebody's life or to say, you know, well, you look like you're on drugs. He had a hoodie on. Or you look like you're, you look like you're about to go do something. I mean, and because in America today, whether Hispanic or white or black, I think some people still have a problem with accepting certain people in certain areas.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you're walking with the hoodie and you're an African-American, you are automatically targeted for doing something you have no business doing. I mean, I dress up every day, but there are moments when I dress down and have on a hat. You know, some people forget that is me. And I believe what's happening in Sanford, Florida is just a drop in the bucket
of what's
of what is happening
absolutely
around the country
absolutely
in reference to the targeting of African Americans and minorities that are being targeted in this way. But this issue right here, and it's not even that the police shot him, it was a neighborhood watch person.
Right.
Nine times out of ten we're dealing with police.
That's right. Yeah, that's one of the things about this. Yeah.
Doing this type of senseless brutality. But this is a neighborhood watch person who had a history, of course, of being active in the neighborhood watch. But why this day would you decide to take a gun out and shoot somebody? I feel it was very premeditated. I feel that with everything involved in this, if he really felt that Trayvon was a danger, as you heard the 911 tapes, when he called the police, he did the right thing. Following him, it went overboard. He had the intention of doing harm to that young man, and now it's just become, you know, the Sanford police have just made it a mess, and I'm just totally disgusted with the process that is happening down in Florida right now. It's awful.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I would agree with that. You know, the other thing that comes to mind is Mr. Zimmerman, if I'm not mistaken, he had some problems with law enforcement at one point,
right.
And the problems that he had were dismissed, and it has not been made public, as far as we know, as to what transpired, why they were dismissed. So this guy apparently has a history, can I say history, of suspicious behavior.
Although one of the interesting things about the, and this particularly I think with some eyewitnesses in the aftermath, is that the police came and they obviously did not take his gun. They accepted his explanation, but there was seemed to be a certain acceptance of him. There was a certain rapport between the officers that came and this individual. The police, when we look at what the police did in the aftermath, mm-hmm. there seems to be some relationship there that this was acceptable.
I think that the entire Sanford police force, I don't think it was enough. I don't think it's enough for the chief to step down. I think the whole force. I mean, this is blatant corruption. There is no way, and the evidence is overwhelming. Even, and I put this argument out, even if, hypothetically, nobody was there, but one thing we do know is that Trayvon is dead, he was shot, and he had a bag of Skittles and iced tea.
Yeah.
Even if Trayvon, because he was being followed by somebody that would not leave him alone, decided to defend himself or do something, obviously, if he has a bag of Skittles and iced tea, he didn't have no weapon. They didn't find no weapon. They didn't find a knife or a gun. So if he decided to hurt Mr. Zimmerman just off of self-defense, punching him in the face or having a little scrapple, that's nothing. But when we have Mr. Zimmerman firing a gun and trying to claim self-defense
at a 17-year-old.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's just ridiculous. Yeah, I think that the entire Sanford police force needs to be relieved of their duties. This is blatant corruption. And if you do, I don't know who accredited them or what kind of law enforcement they're doing in Florida, in Sanford, but anybody with common sense and looking at the evidence, how can you say that a bag of Skittles, iced tea, and that's all you found on Trayvon, and then using this law saying that Mr. Zimmerman's shot in self-defense, it just does not apply. Yeah. And if the tables were turned, and if it was an African-American that shot somebody in their neighborhood, there would be no question that he would have been arrested. And the police have the right to arrest off of probable cause. They can hold you. They don't have to charge you, but they can hold you just to make sure they have everything in. If it was an African-American, he would have been held. He probably would have been charged. He possibly would be arraimed at this very minute right now without bond.
And it's
an outrage.
Absolutely.
I mean, one of the things I found fascinating as I was doing some research, there was a study done about people carrying guns. Mm-hmm. The first part of the study indicated that people who carry guns tend to see greater threats than people who don't carry guns. That's the first thing. But the second thing was that if you're African American, you are more likely to be perceived to have a weapon from, say, a small object, say, for instance, like a cell phone, than if you are white. That is, they did these studies that looked at this, and that was one of the racial perception is such that for whites, if they look at someone who's African American and see a small object, we don't know what it is, they have a tendency to think it is a gun, as opposed to, for instance, if they're looking at somebody who's white.
And that may have had much to do with what we're experiencing right now in Florida. The perception that the majority has of African Americans, Hispanic, et cetera, and it's got to change. It's got to change because if it doesn't, we are going to be inundated with a whole lot of bad things. And this whole situation was just deplorable. You know, I try to put myself in a position. What if my child was treated like that? What if my child was shot? What would I expect? What would I have expected? I certainly would have expected law enforcement to have spoken with me, let me know what's happening, let me know that they were doing something about it. And I don't believe that has happened. I don't believe it has happened at all. But going back to these stereotypical impressions that people form of each other, that we form of each other, we've got to realize that they underlie much of the situation, much of the conflict that we experience today across America.
One of the things, too, are you comfortable with the idea that we're now at least getting some reaction? That is, we see the police chief he stepped aside. We see somebody else being brought in at the state level to investigate. We see the federal government coming in now, the Department of Justice coming in and investigating. But with all of that, one of the things, Earl Farrell Hutchison, one of my favorite guys, knew him back in L.A., he makes the observation, it's all good, but don't be relieved, because the DOJ generally prosecutes only a small fraction of, for instance, police abuse cases. That usually there are A-team lawyers that defend these folks. That oftentimes the DOJ is reluctant to step on local toes. That there's the terms of financial resources are often there. And, of course, now they have to deal with the issue of the stand your ground. I mean, are you confident? Do you have confidence that the DOJ and these other folks are going to be able to, are actually going to get into it? What do you think, Greg?
I think, first of all, it's you're playing catch up. It is, why is Zimmerman not arrested? And with the police chief stepping down, it's doing nothing in reference to finding out. Why did you let Zimmerman go? I think they're playing a game of catch-up with the state's attorney that was on the case, and now they're dropping off. I mean, you guys are trying to, I believe they're trying to appease the plea that's going out right now. And it's just an outrage. Don't try to play catch-up. What you all need to do is pursue this as if it was somebody who was, quote-unquote, important. Pursue it as if it was a serious case. I don't think they're taking it as such. Mr. Zimmerman right now today, as far as I know, is still walking as a free man. And they need to pursue this actively. He needs to be arrested. They need to find out what the Sanford police have been doing. There is no excusable reason why it takes this long. Here we are almost a month later, and here we are. Mr. Zimmerman is still walking around free as if he's done nothing wrong. And the part that amazes me is that there's this huge question mark as if he did do something wrong. That is totally unacceptable to me. Yeah. This is a right and wrong situation right here. There is no gray areas. It is very clear to me, and I believe to the thousands and millions of Americans that are watching, even those that are protesting and taking action, they see this as what it is. And I think the delay in the pursuit of justice is because somebody's trying to cover up their tracks and give an explanation for something that they should have been on on point the first time.
Absolutely.
He should have been arrested. It should have flowed just like that.
Yeah. You know, for all the points you just mentioned, the question was confidence in the Department of Justice. To some degree, where my confidence lies is in the people. Regardless of what the Department of Justice comes in and does, the people of Sanford will not allow, people of the United States will not allow that injustice purportedly to take place. And that's where my confidence lies. I mean, justice can come in, Department of Justice can come in and do whatever they want to do. But they must be fair in what they do. They must be judicious in what they do. And if they're not, they will hear from their bosses, which is, I'm not referring to the president of the United States, I'm referring to the people of this land. So that's where my confidence lies.
But
absolutely.
I think that the Department of Justice, in reference, the Sanford police have shown they are incapable of going after Mr. Zimmerman or even trying to apply justice in this matter properly. And I think that whether or not I have hope, I have expectation that the Department of Justice will do what the Sanford police could not do. And I hope that with all that's going on in reference to, you know, a minimal percentage of cases are prosecuted by the Department of Justice with all that, I hope that this case they will take and it will be a great outcome, because I don't think the Sanford police are capable of handling it. They've shown that.
Absolutely. And to add to that, that it serves as an example for small communities around this country, because
absolutely,
what we're seeing in Sanford, I believe, is symptomatic of a much larger issue that occurs nationally, particularly in small communities. So I hope justice is served. I hope the people, as they've started to do, respond and hold law enforcement and others accountable, and that it serves as a model for what will happen if communities across the United States do not do what they're supposed to do. That's
absolutely
in the best interest of everybody, and not just a certain few.
I know. I guess one of the questions marks, particularly for the feds, is going to be whether this it becomes a civil rights issue, and whether or not indeed there was racial intent. And I know that they're looking particularly at one piece of the 911 call, which is this racial slur. At least it appears, and people have been actually listening to this over and over again. That may be one of the keys to how the Justice Department moves ahead. I want to turn to one of the interesting things, because you guys, both of you, work with youth and so on. And one of the things that struck me is that the local high school doesn't seem to be addressing this at all. I mean, they indicate that basically that they don't want their folks to talk to the media about the issue, about his death. As a matter of fact, Martin's death was not really announced until I think it was the 21st of March. At the high school, which is much different. Say, for instance, there was actually an individual, a young man, who was apparently killed in a car accident, in which there was a great deal done in terms of raising money and making a big deal. It was not until March 21st. And the teachers have not necessarily been encouraged to talk to the students at length about this issue. You deal with young people all the time. What would you be doing right now in terms of a school where someone has been killed like this? What would you react, Craig?
Well, in this area of Florida, well, we know Florida has a high Hispanic Cuban population, and I think that with the Hispanic allegedly being the one that shot a Trayvon, I think they're trying to be very careful not to incite any type of racial division between the students or to cause any type of fight or whatever. That might be the reason, I'm not for sure.
If you were at a school, what would you do?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, in a high school, people keep track with current events. And so they're definitely talking about it. I think if I was in the high school setting, I would not make it a issue of race in reference to black, mm-hmm. white, or Hispanic. It's just an issue of right and wrong. And I think that's the key part of this whole incident.
I would talk about it for the reasons you just mentioned. It's out there. It's in the news every day. They know it's out there.
Right.
I would talk about it, but I would also make it a teaching point. It's got to become a teaching point, making kids aware of the fact that these things do occur. And what should they do when they see circumstances, or they perceive, or they believe circumstances or situations like this have occurred? I would use it as a teaching moment. A lot of the kids I come in contact with, there's a great deal of distrust with law enforcement, a great deal. And that distrust many times leads to them responding inappropriately to certain situations. This situation that has occurred in Sanford is an opportunity for them to realize that there's a world out there. Certain things do happen, but there are certain things that we can do to go about dealing with the situations that we're confronted with, to make certain that it's remedied in a way that's good to both sides.
I'd also turn to something, I think it was Jonathan Capehart, I think it was, who wrote a column reacting to this. And he talks about, and I think they refer to it in NPR earlier this week, as the talk that black parents have with their sons. Capehart wrote, for instance, that the things he was told by his parents were, don't run in public because it looks suspicious. Don't run while carrying anything in your hands, and don't talk back to the police, which is probably a general one in any event. Michelle Johnson, who writes a blog called Black and Married, says, don't touch anything when you're in a store. Says, know who you are, in the sense of don't imitate white friends, because they may be able to do things that may get you into trouble because you're African American. Always get a bag for items that you purchase at a store. And go where you're going and come straight home. These are some of the things. First of all, did your parents, any one of you, sit down and say, by the way, I just want you to know what's going on?
I don't like what I just heard. I really don't. I tell you where the issue lies. The issue becomes dealing with enhancing the sensitivity of persons that are in leadership positions, authoritarian positions, making them aware that there are certain idiosyncrasies every cultural group has. I mean, even here in Salisbury, I noticed there's a great divide between races, great divide between people of different ethnic backgrounds, and what sometimes happens is that majority group, based on the mores and the idiosyncrasies that they're familiar with, they place a judgment or value on someone from a different culture or from a different race. The concern, the issue, the problem, the resolution lies in providing, as far as I'm concerned, providing sensitivity training to persons that are in leadership role, persons that are authoritarian figures, and make them aware that there are differences in cultures, and people respond differently to different circumstances and situations, which does not necessarily mean that they're threatening or they are. See, and that's where I come from. That's the area that I come from, and that's where I think the solutions ought to be.
By the way, did your parents ever have that talk with you?
No, heck no. Heck no.
That's why so aggressive.
My grandparents had a talk with me.
Oh, did they? What was that? Like?
I mean, in regards to
not that kind of talk. Yeah, you were talking don't do this or don't do that.
In reference to if I am pulled over by the police, or I mean they made me aware of the time that I live in. And in reference to the reason why African-American parents have to have these discussions with their children, because you never know. I mean, I'm sure Trayvon's parents did not know that this was gonna happen, or they didn't. Trayvon, when you come home in this gated community, make sure that you're not wearing a hoodie so that nothing can happen to you.
Yeah.
The issue lies for me with the fact that because we have seen so much in this country, law enforcement use racial profiling, and 9 times out of 10, it turns out really bad. I mean, we can go back a couple of years to New York when the NYPD shot up the person's car and he was just getting out of his wallet. I mean, there are so many instances of this kind of discretion that law enforcement uses that you can't never be too safe. It's just like America today. We're so on edge because of terrorism that we're taking everything to the max. And I think it's the same thing, you know, with African-American parents for their kids. That I don't want my child to be in a situation where they are going to be harassed by the police or, and as you said, I agree with the training and making sure that law enforcement is aware. But in America today, there's this underlying and this silent thing that racial profiling is not existing. And Sanford is a prime example that it's still going on today.
I want to thank both our guests. We're coming up here to the end of the show. Craig Wilson, he's an elder at Cathedral of Love, a local Salisbury church. Also, Orville Penn, outspoken, man. I've seen him in dozens of places. You're out there. He's also with the advisory board for the Lower Eastern Shore Children's Center and also was appointed to the Wicomico County Youth and Civic Center. Also want to thank Jamila Krimple. She was involved with producing the show. I'm Don Rush. You've been listening to Delmarva Today, and thanks for listening.
This has been Delmarva Today, a production of Delmarva Public Radio. Chris Rank produces and is our audio engineer. Our volunteer producers are Penny Hartman, Kathleen Grout, and Jim White. Don Rush is your host. For podcasts, visit our website, delmarvapublicradio.net, or subscribe to the Delmarva Today podcast in iTunes. Delmarva Today can now be seen on PAC 14. To view the schedule, visit the Daily Times or visit pac14.org.